Hello and welcome to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy, the podcast that examines conspiracy theory, conspiracy fact, and those who promote these theories. I'll be your host, Mike Bowler, as we take a look at conspiracy in the news for the week ending June 24th, 2018. And it was a very, very light news cycle. I only have two stories. One has to do with Bitcoin. There's apparently another conspiracy about, I don't know, it's trying to link a fellow Vitalik Buterin, I believe is how you pronounce the name. He's a co-founder of Ethereum. It's one of the many cryptocurrencies out there. And somehow he's accused of, or perhaps, I don't know, but somehow he's involved with the origination of the original Bitcoin. There was a June 15th report on a British publication claimed that Buterin believes that the National Security Agency of the United States, the NSA, was involved in the creation of Bitcoin, the world's most popular cryptocurrency by market capitalization. Interestingly, the publisher cited a seven-year-old conversation between Buterin and a user on an online forum, Bitcoin Talk, to support its claim. While the report itself did not create much brouhaha, as sensational stories usually do, it prompted a quick and categorical denial from the Ethereum co-founder. And of course, then the article goes into his NSA. NSA is Satoshi Nakamoto. Nakamoto apparently is this elusive creator of Bitcoin. And of course, there's a number of who this guy might be. No one has stepped forward and says, hey, I'm Nakamoto. No one really knows who he is. He may be a real person who's just being totally anonymous, or represents a group of people who actually did the coding and the design and everything involved with Bitcoin, or at least the blockchain that is the basis of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies. So that's pretty much this story, trying to, again, people speculating who the creator of Bitcoin is, and of course, pointing fingers. Buterin has been accused of manipulating the Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin, using speculative investments, this possible, you know, whatever. But certainly there's a lot of interest in this Bitcoin. I've talked about it before. I'm not a big fan of it at this point because it seems too speculative as opposed to actually doing any real financial work. So, but it certainly is getting interest. There's a lot of interest in it and how it functions and how it can be applied to other areas, not just to create cryptocurrency. So I'm just going to kind of leave at that. If there's anything more on this, I'll, of course, pass it on. And the second story is conspiracy nuts flood the DNC's lawsuit against Russia. Now, I've talked about the Mueller investigation. There's certainly a lot of stuff that's being attributed to or accused of. And there's this whole investigation. Certainly, I don't think anybody really knows what's really going on with that investigation. But with that said, and you know, I think Mueller is moving in the right direction, doing everything right, finding, interviewing, determining if there was any foul play or any laws broken or whatever. So he's doing this, I think, the right way, and he is starting to net certain characters within the Trump campaign, Russia, and so on. And of course, the indictments have gone out. People are being drug into court, so on. And as kind of a side note to all this, apparently there are two conspiracy theorists. One guy is David Andrew Christensen, and the second fellow is Patrick Farrell. from Florida. Now, this is from an article from the Daily Beast. So I'm going to call that the slightly dubious, but when I did start looking up, there's some factual basis for this article that these two fellows, Christensen and Farrell, have been attaching or trying to get attached to the various lawsuits that the DNC is filing against the various Russian players in this controversy, basically playing the sovereign citizen card, so to speak, where Christensen is notorious for trying to attach his particular conspiracy to anything, especially with this Mueller investigation. Apparently, when I started looking this guy up, he believes that during Hurricane Katrina, a government agency was released from top secret CIA and Defense Department facilities during the hurricane and has been killing people ever since. And apparently he has done this, actually filing with the courts to get attached to these cases with the idea of trying to get the evidence of this Katrina virus. Of course, the courts have thrown it out as being frivolous and not any way linked to any spying or any issues with the Russians on the Democratic National Committee. And then when I started looking into the filings, I've got copies of what he has filed with the various courts, and it reads very much from the sovereign citizen playbook. And I'll talk about the sovereign citizen movement here a little bit later. I just want to get through the story because Christensen he's published a number of books based solely on these filings. You can go to Amazon, look this guy up. You will find that he has these books on Kindle. You can get them for 99 cents a piece. So I splurged and bought one of them, and it was so horribly, it is just a rehash of everything he's filed against the government in these various cases, which of course have been denied, turned around, and actually to a point where he is being accused of cyber stalking. And if he does bother the courts anymore, he could be arrested. And of course, the second person is doing basically the same thing, but actually trying to counter what Christensen's doing. Apparently anything that Christensen files, he files something opposite to it, based on what I've been able to read. Unfortunately, Farrell is not as forthcoming with anything other than his websites. Basically, his beef seems to be that his house was foreclosed and it involves the Jews. And he apparently somehow the Robert Mueller investigation had something to do with this. So, and I have been able to really figure out what Farrell is doing in this case, other than he's also filing these attachments to these cases, again being denied, thrown out, being accused of cyber stalking, and so on. There's not much I can find on him, but certainly Christensen is very prolific in his writings. Apparently, just takes what he has, slam it into an ebook, and put it out on Amazon. So, and that's pretty much the story. I did want to mention that. Talk a little bit about sovereign citizens, since this is a short episode. And as I'm recording, I'm roughly about 12 minutes in to the recording. And I just wanted to at least explain what a sovereign citizen is. And actually, I'm still doing some research on some aspects of this. So next show, I'll probably do a follow-up. But the sovereign citizen is a kind of a subset of the financial global, or at least the globalist financial takeover of the world. And these are people who are either fighting that takeover, but mostly when you really dig into it, what they're doing is there's a few things, and this is what makes the sovereign citizen movement, and it is more, you know, since it's kind of an overall description of various activities, I've been trying to break it down as best I can, because there's a component of really the real sovereign citizens. These are people who believe that through various legal maneuvers that they can detach themselves from being a citizen of the United States or a citizen of the state they reside, and they don't have to follow the laws of those states. That's a fairly simplistic explanation of what a sovereign citizen is. Now, there's a sovereign citizen tax protest group. Again, they use the same things as the sovereign citizen, that they can detach from the government, but they use that to dodge federal or state taxes or whatever taxes they don't feel like paying. And this is usually what it comes out to in all these cases. They don't think they deserve a speeding ticket because they were speeding on a highway. So they'll argue that they weren't driving on a highway. They were traveling on the highway using a esoteric law that says that, I believe it's somewhere buried in a law that's part of a basic constitution. I haven't really been able to figure that one out yet, where that law, how they make that determination. But apparently within the commercial codes, there's this thing about traveling and that you cannot legally impede someone from traveling. So they claim instead of driving their car, they're traveling in their car, which supposedly, according to their beliefs, is the code word to say that, or the key to get them out of paying a ticket or being arrested or so on. In the tax evasion sovereign citizens, again, they will use various laws or events. In one of these cases, I believe it was in what Christensen has talked about, was that the United States doesn't exist as a country anymore. It's a corporation. In 1871, the U.S. incorporates, and now instead of being a government, it is a business, and that business uses your birth certificate as a down payment to the bankers that they can borrow $650,000 to $720,000 or more, depending on what flavor of tax evasion the sovereign believes in. And by saying the right words, filing the right liens, filing special paperwork, that you can get that money back. They call it a straw man theory, where when you're born, there's the physical person, and then there is the corporation person that makes up you, the individual. That corporate entity that is represented by a birth certificate, and they'll make claims about. I've seen a couple of claims where, because the letter, the serial number on a birth certificate, I looked at mine, I looked at a couple others that were available online, that there's a red printed serial number on some of these birth certificates. Not all have this. Sometimes it's handwritten in, sometimes it's stamped, but there's these red letters, red numbers actually, and because it looks the same as the serial number on a U.S. currency, the dollar bill, they believe that the birth certificate is a financial document that apparently can be cashed in or traded or borrowed against or whatever their particular belief is, that it is actually a bond or some type of something with the value, and the value then again varies from $250,000 to sometimes $10 million. I see all sorts of different numbers, though. though the 650, and I'm kind of focusing on that number because I think I found where that number comes from, but I'll explain it that here in a little bit. But they believe that this your birth certificate is a bond that's worth this 650, and where that 650 comes from probably comes from the FAA places a value on every passenger as a basis for what it would cost to, I think it sounds like when they do the calculation, like a risk analysis calculation, each person is worth $650 million. You times that by the number of passengers. So if a $10 part fails, the actual cost is the 650,000 times whatever, you know, times the number of passengers and crew and so on. And that ratio, if that ratio ends up being bigger than the actual cost of replacing that part, then they go ahead and replace that part. There's maybe cases where that number is bigger than the actual, whatever the financial payout, which would mean that in the FAA's case, they would ground the airplane and, you know, then major work would have to happen before anybody gets on that plane. I think this has something to do with risk management where, you know, the cost of a, you know, someone dying, it seems weird that, and I've seen this in a couple of cases where they'll calculate what it would cost to settle a wrongful death suit or a product liability type thing. If you're using a product and you die, they will, you know, when they look at, I'm not 100% clear on how that works, but they do these calculations. So if it's known that this car could catch on fire, they have to do a recall to replace a part. If that part is 10 cents, then 150, whatever, they'll do a they'll figure out what it would cost to do this recall. The number of cars that have to come back, how many, so on, versus the chances of someone dying. If that, not, apparently, as far as some lawyers look at, when the lawyers look at this, and it's like, you know, if I kill a person in a car, I'm a car maker, someone dies in my car, I will probably pay out this much money to settle that case. And they'll look at how often that happens. So if this particular part that fails that causes the death only may occur in one in a million vehicles, and I've got, you know, 10 million vehicles, so that's what, 10 potential deaths. So if I have to bring in 10 million vehicles and the cost of doing that recall versus the payout, if it's more expensive to do the recall than pay the people, then they don't do the recall. This has actually happened in the case of a death in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where a semi-truck runs into a Ford minivan and killed the family. Of course, the family sued Ford for negligence and so on, and they come to find out that the part that it came out that the to stop production and put a piece of cardboard to prevent the fire from spreading into the car, or it would reduce the chance of fire spreading through the vehicle or to the vehicle in case of a catastrophic accident. The cost of that, the lost production, the recall that would have to go along with it, cost more than having to pay out the deaths of this family. I thought that was kind of crazy. I would have probably not have believed it if I didn't see it on 60 Minutes. There was actually, and when I realized that, or when they said that the person that was made that decision was that it had nothing to do with any type of engineering, any type of marketing or anything like that. It was a lawyer, a risk management lawyer by the name of Kenneth Starr. And this guy, if you're not familiar, Kenneth Starr was the guy that went after Bill Clinton and came up with the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Now, that particular accident also exposed the governor of Illinois, who at the time was the secretary of state who was managing the driver's licenses, the commercial driver licenses, so on. And it turned out that he was taking bribes from trucking schools to pass. Well, he was taking bribes or basically getting campaign donations to his reelection to be reelected governor. And a number of these, to get that money, he promised a number of these truck training schools, the semi-truck driving schools, that they would be able to get their drivers, their students' licenses. Many of these truck drivers never even completed a course. They would normally have failed the courses and never got their licenses, but because of this bribe or payment, they were able to get their licenses. And there's actually been two very high profile. One was this accident in Milwaukee, and then the other one was a semi-driver crossing a railroad track in front of an Amtrak train in Kankakee. The train was the city of New Orleans, and it was on its way to Memphis at the time. And this truck driver, for whatever reason, went around the crossing guards and got stuck or stopped in the middle of the track and caused a derailment and some serious deaths. The upshot was that the governor was arrested. He was doing time in jail, being replaced by Rod Blagojevich, who is also now in jail. So Illinois has some pretty, I think the only other state that comes close to Illinois is New Jersey. And I think New Jersey has put as many governors as Illinois has. So, but needless to say, I'm kind of off track here, but the idea is that this number is being used as, which is normally used for risk management and the potential for having to pay out a settlement, maybe being misrepresented as the actual dollar that the government borrows from the central bank, from the Federal Reserve, to run the country. This is nothing of the sort, but this is what the sovereigns believe. And when I started, there's actually these numbers, the various numbers used by different departments on the, again, for risk management, for liability calculations, what it may cost, or doing an estimate of what it might cost if, whatever that department is looking at. I have a feeling also it may be used by insurance companies to determine their payout liabilities and so on. The tax evading sovereigns have been using these numbers to say that, again, this is money that's been put aside by the, or been borrowed from the Federal Reserve by the U.S. government, and somehow then it gets used to buy whatever. I don't know why that is important. It's not true. Nothing like that happens. But the sovereigns believe it because of, again, these esoteric interpretations of law. I want to dig into that a little bit more at some point. I'm waiting right now for some books on some of this, the legal stuff that gets mentioned in the sovereign citizen realm. Because the third and fourth types of sovereign citizens they're both kind of the same, because in this case, they believe that they don't, that the, because, they believe that in one case, the 14th Amendment to the Constitution somehow created a different type of citizen. It's not necessarily, it was basically when the slaves were liberated and given rights and so on, that because of everything changing, like instead of just white people being free and so on and everyone else, it basically nulls and voids everything else with the Constitution. Again, this is sovereign citizen talk or logic. I have to understand this a little bit better. So, but the basically then they become not citizens, and that's used by white supremacists, white racists to claim that they don't belong to the United States. And in the same token, there's a organization, the Moorish, I think it's the Moorish Temple, which are primarily African American, who also believe that they are not part of the United States, and using the same logic as the white racists. And these are this Moorish Temple, while it is claimed that they don't condone this, and these are only a small section. It is a kind of a apparently linked through the Nation of Islam, the Louis Farrakhan and all that kind of stuff. And this idea that because they were that, and of course in the theory that all African Americans, blacks, whatever the term you want to use, had all originated in Morocco, they don't recognize anything else in Africa, any other country, any other region, that somehow that they were somehow linked to Morocco. And maybe, like I said, I don't know if there's a treaty or something like that they're also throwing into this mix. But anyhow, again, they believe because all blacks in the United States are derived from Morocco, that they're not technically, they don't have to be citizens. They don't have to respect any laws of the United States. And it's, again, the sovereign citizens and all these different manifestations are a pretty small number, but in places like Florida, Tennessee, Kentucky, apparently Texas is now getting a few of these, where the incidences are getting much more serious. And it's the sovereign citizen movement is getting a boost from prison lawyers, basically prisoners who are studying the law and advising other prisoners to take on the tactics they use. Jared Fogle, I think I've talked about him in probably a few months ago, that he's filed these basic documents that are clearly sovereign citizen documents or type documents, which have been thrown out and denied and all that kind of stuff. Kent Hovind, if you're a follower of the creationists, Kent Hovind has used sovereign citizen tactics. He's denied being a sovereign citizen, but he acts very much like a sovereign citizen. So, and apparently, those that have tried these tactics have found themselves in jail or having to pay heftier fines. There's a subset of sovereign citizens who seem to like to harass judges and sheriffs and so on through applying liens to their personal property. And of course, these are fraudulent. Eventually, once it's determined what happened and what they did, these guys who've done that are now facing jail time or spending time in jail. So it's a really scary bunch. If they don't like a law, they won't follow it. If they don't want to pay the fees for their license plates or driver's license or whatever piece of paper they want, they will argue that, because of this law, I don't have to buy driver's license, or I don't have to buy license plates, or whatever, you know. They'll use this fake law or fake understand, it's a real law, but they've misinterpreted the law to fit their needs. And that's pretty much what a sovereign citizen, if you hear that term, These are people who have no respect for the law. They have no respect for law-abiding citizens, and they will clog up courts. They will harass. They will be, if you ever look up, you can find hundreds of these videos on YouTube about sovereign citizens and watching how they behave. So I'm going to end the show on that. I don't have any real comments. It was a kind of a tough week last week. I had to get a new air conditioner, so I had been had to deal with that for a couple days. I'm still trying to figure out why my email doesn't work. So definitely, if you can, contact me through Facebook. I believe you can and you can also comment on my website, MikeBowler.com. Hopefully you can get to that. I haven't seen any issues with getting onto my website, but then again, I've been working, I've been checking this stuff. So there's nothing wrong with getting to MikeBowler.com. You could even try going to MikeBowler.net, and then there's a link to MikeBowler.com, and you should be able to get to my website, and you could comment there if need be. So I'd like to thank you for listening. This was episode 95, recorded June 25th, a day late, 2018. Thank you and good night.